The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Lila and David Sears are a married couple who are not licensed therapists. The following opinions are their own and should not be taken as medical or psychological counseling advice. Relationships today face more challenges than at many times in recent history. Join married couple Lila and David Sears as they navigate the world of relationships in Empathy Ever After.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back after a prolonged absence to Empathy Ever After. I'm David Sears.
And I'm Lila Sears.
And we are a married couple. We are approaching our 18th anniversary in April of this year.
Yes.
Our marriage will be able to vote.
I don't think it works that way.
I think it should.
That we get an extra.
We get an extra vote. We can say one of our cats.
One of the cats gets to vote.
One of the cats. I say little girl. She'd probably vote for herself. Dictator for life.
Little girl.
We are going to talk about a difficult subject. Lila will probably cry. I'll get choked up. But we have been away since August. I want to say either September or August was our last episode.
Yeah.
And that was when my father-in-law, Lila's stepfather, Steve Holsey, rest in peace, took a turn for the worse, and we had to focus more on him and my mother-in-law. And so today's episode is going to be about caring for and losing a parent. So trigger warning, if you've lost a parent and this subject is something you're not ready to get with, we're cool. That's why we're going ahead and talking with you right now before we get into the nitty gritty. We're going to go over our past essentially 4 months, the past 4 months. I'm good at math.
Yeah. So my stepdad, and I'm already, my voice is already breaking. We went through ALS for the last year. We received a diagnosis a little over a year ago. Steve had, I'm so sorry, y'all. This is an extremely difficult subject because we lost Steve in December, and he was my dad. He was my dad for longer than he wasn't. He's a great man, and I miss him very, very much. So we are, trying to kind of pick up, and he had a very aggressive, fast-moving type of ALS called bulbar onset ALS, which is different from the type of ALS that you may have seen, like if you're familiar with Stephen Hawking, that type of ALS, which is more like limb onset ALS. That is the type of ALS which onsets in your limbs. The type that Steve had was the opposite type, which onsets in your central functioning first, which onsets with more of your speech and swallowing and your, like I said, your central functions,
your breathing,
those types of things, rather than with your hands and feet, where you might have loss of like being able to walk, or you might experience falls, that kind of thing, which he did have some of that early on, but his, main issues were centered around the speech and swallowing and breathing and those kind of things. And it was a very rapid onset. And so that's what that's where we were. He would go for, you know, at first it would be a couple months, and then he would have sort of an episode where he would have a downturn, and then he would sort of never recover the full level of functioning from that episode. And it just, it just got really bad really fast. And the last like 4 months, you know, he really lost the ability to walk very quickly. He had to start using a walker. Then we had to go to a wheelchair. And then eventually, there at the very end, he did become bedbound. I will say that, not everyone is going to have the kind of spouse that I have.
And thank God.
But David was an absolute rock star, you guys. David took on so much responsibility of lifting and moving Steve around physically, that we essentially just moved in with my parents.
We moved in Thanksgiving weekend. I brought my dad to watch the Iron Bowl. I lucked out and was able to get the UAB game off that Saturday. Thank you, Nick Norris. So I could run the Iron Bowl or watch the Iron Bowl with Steve, my mom, or my mother-in-law, Lila, our friend Emily, and my dad. And on the way back to take my dad back home, there was an incident where Steve fell. And my mother-in-law and Lila got him up, but the injury it caused my mother-in-law, she was in so much pain lifting him up, it hurt her back so badly she started crying, and she cried so much she started vomiting. And at that point, I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm just going to move in with you. I have several great bosses. Tony Curry, who's this podcast is on his network, Ryan Haney and Valerie Vining at Cumulus Media. And then the most important one was my boss, Courtney Bell, at ATI Physical Therapy, who worked with my schedule. I was able to work essentially from when the nurse got at home to when she left. So I was putting in 6-hour days. ATI was able to edit remotely because Tony hooked me up with some stuff. And I was basically just took time away from jocks and talk to focus on my family. And that's what they are. I know some people say, well, they're just your in-laws. No, they're family. And Steve took me in and did everything that you would hope a father-in-law would do. Same with Jan. She's been a great mother-in-law, best mother-in-law anybody could ask for. And I knew I had to step up and help him with that. Cause I don't know how many people actually listen to this that aren't our friends, but I'm 6'4" 340 pounds.
He's my tiny husband. David's,
I'm a big guy. I'm not as good a shape as I should be. But I knew,
but he can pick things up. He's big, strong boy.
Steve had withered away so much to the point that he was about 150. So I could essentially lift him up and carry him like a baby, get him up, put him in the wheelchair, get him to the bathroom, put him on the toilet, get him off the toilet, take him back to the wheelchair and get him to either his bed or to his recliner. When I moved in with him, Steve, because of the type of ALS he had, it felt like he had to use the bathroom all the time. And so there were many a nights where I got 4 or 5 hours sleep because he would just keep feeling like he had to use the bathroom. So we'd take him to the bathroom. Nothing would happen. He'd sit for about 15 minutes. Then we'd say, "Are you done?" He'd say, "Yeah." So I'd go in there and get him, and Jen and I'd take him back to bed. And Amy, Steve's sister, would come and help with us. And we kind of had a little rotation going where Lila could take a night away, Amy could take a night away, and Jan could take a night away. So someone could get a full night's rest during the whole thing, because it is physically and mentally draining.
Yeah. If you've ever done caretaking of anybody in your family, or, you know, a friend, or if you've ever done that, you know, professionally, or, you know, whatever, you know that it is exhausting. You know that being a caregiver is exhausting. You know that, like, if you're a parent, you know that it's exhausting. If your child is sick, you know that if you have a parent you've taken care of, or a grandparent, or somebody like that's had cancer or something, you know it's exhausting. If you've cared for somebody at the end of life, like we've just done, it is tremendously draining. And that's kind of what we've been doing for the last 3 weeks or so, is trying to recover ourselves, is trying to
and I think that's partly why you're so sick right now, is because your body is finally letting you relax.
Yeah,
it's like you've had migraine, you've had cold, you've had other flare-ups, and you just cannot seem to get right.
Yeah,
and I think that is because your body is finally decompressing, and unfortunately for you, that means illness.
I feel like I've had like a little like vaccinated case, because I did have a flu shot, but I feel like I've had like a little vaccinated case of the flu or something, because I've had like all those symptoms of like the body aches and the headaches and the congestion and the
run to the border.
Yeah, that too. Thanks for sharing that with our audience. I'm sure
there's no such thing as TMI on this podcast.
Nope. Everybody wants to know everything about everything.
Exactly.
We wanted to talk about how it affected our relationship to do this caregiving. One thing that it's done for me is, you know, it allowed me to like show some other people, like, because my mom was like so overwhelmed by how David just stepped in and just did all this stuff and just went without sleep and just was like so patient with Steve. And
I will take this back. There was one time I was in a lot of pain because my knees were giving out on me and my back was really killing me. And Steve, part of his ALS, was kind of getting stubborn and not belligerent, but just he had a thing about not going to bed.
That was just Steve, though.
And
that was Steve. Really, Steve did not. Steve was a night owl, and if you knew Steve, you knew that Steve had some insomnia issues, and Steve had that all his life, and he never really got over that, and he didn't want to go to bed. And
one night it just hit me. I'm sure every parent's been there, every person who's taking care of someone. You just bleep it. Get your butt to bed, you know? And Lila had to calm me down. And it was the only time I lost it. I didn't lose it at Steve. Lila came and sat with me and we talked, and she calmed me down. I was just very hurty. I was very angry.
Well,
I was very tired.
But other than that, and like just the amount of responsibility that David took on and how he just did everything that he needed to do, and the amount of care that he took of Steve, and just that he did things that not every son-in-law would do. And, that she was able to say to all her friends, like, I don't know what I'd do without David, and say that to everyone, like, oh, David's a saint. I don't know what I'd do without David, and say it like over and over and over again. And like, for me to then be able to say, I know that you're used to seeing David as like my big goofy guy, but this is what I could see when I fell in love with David. And I'm like, this is the heart that I see in David all the time. This is what I see, like, when I tell David I love you, like, this is where I'm talking. And so that's like, you know, not your normal interaction with your partner. It's to me, that part of it has helped me.
Well, I will tell you why I did it. I love you and I want to do everything for you. And I really wanted to make it better. And unfortunately, I'm not a biologist, nor am I a...
You're not a neurobiologist?
I'm
not a
neurobiologist. I'm just a guy that knows how to do podcasts and other stuff. But I know this makes no sense, and I've been talking to my therapist about this. I felt so guilty that I couldn't cure Steve, that I just wanted to help in whatever way I could. So I was like, bleep it. All right. I'll wipe his butt. I'll do whatever. I'll help put on a diaper. I'll run get fried chicken. You got a craving for Rigatoni's. I'll go to Florence and get you Rigatoni's, you know? So I just, whatever I could do to help make it easy for them was what I was going to do. And whether that was running to Florence to get Rigatoni's for their anniversary, or staying up all night with Steve. There was one night he was up every hour and Jan just passed out, and I'd let her be. It was just me and Steve, and I was taking care of Steve because Jan physically could not do anymore because she had hit a wall.
Yeah.
And
That's because my mother is, you know, about to turn 72 years old in a few days.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do eventually hit walls when you're that age.
You do. And she's got other
health issues. Whether you want to admit it or not.
True. She's got other health issues that were compounded by the...
Yeah, she's got lupus.
The bad out and diabetes.
Yeah. So
her blood sugar, because of the lack of sleep, was all over the place. And we were doing our best to just keep her helpful. And there were nights where... it'd be me, Amy, and Steve, and Lila and Jan would go to the other room and just bawl. It would just bawl because they couldn't help them. They were frustrated. They were sad. They were angry. They had so many emotions, and all they could do was cry. And when they did that,
I've got an ocean.
Yeah. I would turn up the volume so Steve wouldn't hear it, because I know Steve felt guilty sometimes when that happened. So I would turn up the volume on the TV, and Amy would be like, what are you doing? I was like, I just can't hear it. So, which Steve didn't mind because Steve couldn't hear anyway. So, but you've got to watch for your partner. There was one time Lila got mad at me. Literally whatever I said, she got mad at, because she thought I was patronizing her when I would say, okay. So then she'd want a response and I didn't know what to say.
So just nod.
So I just nodded. So she was, I forget what had happened, but Steve, this was when we realized we're about to go to the end game. And she was so upset and just so frustrated and sad and didn't know how to express it. And luckily, Michaela Hayes Scholes, you're amazing. she and I had talked about this ahead of time. And she's like, there's going to be a point when Lila's going to get mean and you're just going to have to understand she's not mad at you. She's just mad at the situation. And like Ricky Bobby, I didn't know what to do with my hands. So I just sat there, and when she's wanted a response, I wasn't sure what to do. So I just said, nodded my head. And then she left and I was like, okay.
and I'm sorry.
No, you apologize. You apologize after that.
I did.
But it's a frustrating situation. You're not sure how to handle it. You can't make it better. Well,
and there's no way to handle it because there's, you know what's coming. And that's the thing with
ALS.
That's the thing with ALS is there's no cure. It's 100% fatal. There's no good outcome. If somebody has ALS, they're going to die with ALS. And that is,
we're just lucky that his heart was the thing that stopped. He just stopped.
Well,
he didn't get the aspirative pneumonia that we were worried about.
Yeah, we were worried that he was going to at some point get aspiration pneumonia, which was not what happened in the end.
His diaphragm
It was very, it was a very long process, but his death was in the end very peaceful.
And the hospice team we had.
Oh, we had amazing hospice nurses,
Misty
and Sally, in particular, we're just great.
And Carol, the house taker,
our at home, helper
and she called it when she left on Friday. She said,
he's going to leave Sunday. And, she'd stayed with enough people that she knew, that about how long that it would be. And
we just,
I'm sorry, my voice is not holding up to this, but it's
raw. It's real.
Ugh.
It's all good. But Lila was my priority. After that was Jan. Then it was Steve. I know you're like, why wouldn't Steve be the priority? I was like, Lila and Jan had Steve. They did the medicine. They did everything. I had minor stuff with Steve. I just had to lift and carry, occasionally clean them. But for the most part, my job was to do what they said. And no sassiness, just yes, ma'am. Which Lila got tired of.
I hate it when he ma'ams me. I'm not ma'am.
I'm ma'am my boss who's younger than me. I'm ma'am.
Yeah, but teenagers. I'm your wife.
I ma'am the teenagers that come into the clinic.
I am your wife.
Still trying to figure out what the non-binary person. So I just have to say their name, which is really weird. Say yes.
It's friend.
Like, yes, drill sergeant. that's what I feel like when I
friend.
Say
friend. Yes, friend.
But YouTube became my priority, keeping you functioning. There were nights when I was like, you need to go home. Your mom and I got it. You need to go to sleep without any interruptions.
The nights when we were doing medicine every 2 hours were pretty rough too.
Towards the end there, he was alternating, some pain.
Yeah, the pain meds and then the Ativan every 2 hours. And that
Saturday night into Sunday morning, Lyle and I did it. And when we got to the morning part, and Jan woke up, we're like, we're tapping out. We're going to grab some naps. So, and then Sally came over that morning and she's like, it's going to be today.
Yeah. And she was like, it's time for me to stay and not leave now. And, if you are afraid of hospice, please don't be, if you have a loved one, who could use hospice services, please don't be afraid of them because they are so wonderful at their jobs. The ones who are so good at it, and the ones who've been doing it for a really long time in particular, they're just,
they're special people.
Oh my gosh. Because
they see so much death, so much hurt, and they're able to comfort you.
And they can tell you every single thing that is going to happen in a way that makes it not scary. You know, when it happens, they can prepare you for things that are going to happen, because, you know, death doesn't happen just in a way that, like, it happens in the movies and that kind of stuff. It's just,
it's a montage.
Yeah.
It's a montage to get to death.
It is. And it's just, I can't say enough good things about them. But anyway, back to our relationship and stuff about what we went through.
I knew that I needed to be there for y'all. I knew necessarily y'all wouldn't be there for me, if you know what I mean. Y'all would be there, but y'all were just so focused on Steve and doing everything. My job was to make sure y'all were taken care of and y'all would take care of yourself.
Because
there were times when Jan would go hours without eating. She would just stay so focused on Steve. There were times you would focus on Steve and just you wouldn't sleep.
Yeah. Well, she and I both have a tendency to kind of shut other things, like, about ourselves out, like, kind of exclude our own needs when something's going on that we need to take care of.
And I'm a very touchy-feely person. And when Lila stresses out, is very shut down, don't touch me. So there was some little conflict there.
Yeah.
But I knew this was Lila shutting down because she's so stressed. I didn't take it as, oh, she hates me. And I had to remind myself of that. This is, you've known this about her since we've been married.
I mean, you knew this going in.
Yeah. So
you knew this going into the situation. You can't force a hug. You can't force kisses or whatever on somebody who in that moment is going to need something that's the opposite, who's going to need to be maybe left alone or is going to need to, you know, deal with it in some other way, because I might need to feel like I can breathe. And if I feel like I'm being smothered,
that'll anger the midget.
We don't use the M word.
Midgetito. Midgetoro.
The small person.
Torito.
We don't want to make me feel like I'm being further overwhelmed by something.
And I realize that. And again, we've been, as a couple, we'll be 19 years this March, be married 18 years this April. So we still learn some stuff about each other, like the plasticware and silverware thing. But for the most part, I know what she's going to do in a certain situation. And I know what to expect when stress is at a 10. And I know chocolate, leave her alone, and quiet. Those are the three things that really help. And if we're in really bad situation, five cheese gnocchi from Salvatore's. So this is where you need to do the homework and know your partner before shit hits the fan. All right. So we're very lucky She's very caring when she wants to be on her terms. And her terms at that time were very, very minimal because she was so stressed out about her mother and her father. And I knew going into this, when November came and he took a bad turn and we were knowing it was probably going to be by the end of the year, that she was going to be as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. She was just going to be that uptight. And I knew all I can do is give her little ways to decompress when she can, because she wouldn't fully decompress until Steve had passed. And I knew it would just keep building. And she'd finally get a little bit of that decompression after the pass. But then other stresses come on, and then other things hit her.
And yeah.
This process, thank you to my therapist. Everyone grieves at a different rate. Everyone moves at a different rate. Some days you'll be doing great, and then you'll hear a song, and that triggers just a waterfall of emotions. And then some days you'll hear that song, you'll be fine, just a happy memory. So I process grief different than Lila, and you have to realize that as a partner. Because Lila may say, why aren't you feeling the way I'm feeling? Why aren't you still upset? And I'm like, well, I am upset. I'm just taking it a different way than you.
Yeah. And you know, he's not gonna have the same emotions that I have, just because, you know,
I only knew him for 19 years. You knew him for 26.
You know, Steve was my stepdad.
Yeah.
And so, Steve was, you know, it was not the same relationship there. That we had. You know, he didn't introduce you to Lord of the Rings.
No, my mom did.
Yeah. So, you know, it was, you didn't.
He didn't foster my love of the Beatles and George the way he did for you.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was just a lot of,
No, he was my nerd buddy.
Yeah.
We went to movies, when Monty Python gave their final performance, me, you, Dad, Steve, my dad.
Yeah.
Went to go see it at Patton Creek because we all enjoyed Python.
Yeah.
And I mean, we bonded over stuff. He and I bonded over our love for horrible movies.
Well,
we watched some really Monster Truck about a man.
I had forgotten Monster Truck, but you're right. Man
who's a monster that drives a monster truck and runs people over.
You're right.
And he would find the worst movies and we would watch them. He was our own personal Dr. Forrester, but he enjoyed them with us.
That was the thing. He watched them with us.
He did. I mean, there are times when he and I, every time I look at Lila's ring, he helped me pick out the engagement ring and the wedding band. Mm-hmm. I had no clue about jewelry. He had one of best eyes for jewelry
ever. He had great taste in jewelry. My mom has some absolutely gorgeous jewelry that he bought her, and you know that I know he didn't overpay for, because
he ussed them down.
He did.
You sure he's Italian?
We'll talk about the DNA results later.
But those are my memories of Steve and him helping me do that. And also, he was a great husband to Jan, and getting to watch him and her interact I pick at you just as much as he picks at your mom.
Well, he used to make up songs about her.
I do that about you. I make up stories for you.
You do. He made up songs about mom. And he used to make up songs. He used to just make up lyrics about mom that would be to the tune of like church songs and stuff.
We each have different memories.
Yes.
And we each will process this a different way. And we have to understand we're each going to process this differently. And you have to understand your partner. That is their parent they lost.
Yeah. And
they have a different relationship with them than you do. And they have more years in it than you do.
Yeah. And two, this is probably a woeful preview of how it will be when I lose my mother. Mm-hmm. Because you'll have to put me somewhere.
Now I'm just going to give you a sedative.
You'll have to institutionalize me when I lose my mother. Like,
well, I mean, and we can get in your story about that, how your unique relationship with your mother, how it's essentially been you two for nearly 40 years now.
Yeah.
So, and I know how close she is to you. I know how, if something were to happen to you and you went before her, she'd be a mess and I'd have to take care of her. So I know you two have a unique bond, and I know you and Steve had a unique bond, and you're going to grieve. It may take you a year. It may hit you different moments. When their anniversary hits and the August birthday hits, December 15th hits next year, or this year, I mean, it's going to hit you. And there'll be tiny moments where you'll get grief. I know, I have my Infinite playlist on at work, and something in the way she moves came on, and I got a little teary eyed.
Because Steve sang that at our wedding.
Yeah. So there's no right or wrong way to grieve. And you have to realize that. Your partner has to realize that. So, well, I'd say the wrong way to grieve is you being a dick about it.
Yeah.
Like, you're not over it yet. That's the wrong way.
That's the wrong way to allow.
That's a red light.
You have to allow your partner space. I mean, you have to hold space for your partner to do whatever they've got to do. I mean, they are, I don't know if you heard that, but that was a very upset cat.
It was a little girl. Kofi's chilling in the box over here.
Well, that was little girl being like,
she wants to be on the porch right now,
but it's cold and windy.
Yeah. And rainy.
Well, you've got to hold space for your partner to be able to process the way they need to. You can't dictate how you think your partner needs to do things, because you're not inside their brain. You're not inside their emotions. You can't put that on like a coat and wear it around for them. You're not, you just can't do that. You're not the same person, and it's not yours. It's theirs. Mm-hmm.
It's a horrible experience.
Yes, it is.
100% horrible. Unfortunately, as Clint Eastwood said, we all got it coming, kid. You know? And there are some people, it's a long out, drawn out process. You've, unfortunately, your three father figures have all had the long drawn out process.
Yeah.
And
yeah, my father passed away when I was 6 years old, after three heart transplants. He got sick when I was 14 months old. And then my grandfather My mom's dad had pancreatic cancer and
bladder cancer
and heart failure. And he would tell you, well, I reckon aside from the cancer and heart failure, I'm doing all right. But he died after I was an adult.
He died in 2010.
He died in 2010. And then Steve died with ALS, a few weeks ago. And, so it's been rough. On
reliving past traumas.
Yeah. Yeah. Reliving past traumas. And just getting in that loop again.
And here's something you really need to do. Find a therapist you trust and go to them on a regular basis. Lila has seen her therapist every 2 weeks. It has helped her tremendously.
Yeah.
She's come home, her nose raw from blowing it and her eyes bloodshot from crying, but it's helping her make progress.
Yeah.
My therapist has helped me understand my wife better through the process of grieving. And I was carrying guilt because it's just so stupid. There's nothing I could have done. But Jan was hungry and she wanted Lee's Fried Chicken. Lee's Fried Chicken is on the other end of town in Jasper. I was at a gas station, had to run and use the bathroom. And I came back to the text that he's gone. And I was away from them doing something that Jan had asked me to do for her, but I felt so bad that I wasn't there when he passed.
Yeah.
Jan's not mad at me. Lila's not mad at me. They asked me to go do something. I was doing something that Mama Jan had asked me to do.
But you couldn't have stopped it and you couldn't have changed anything. And there was nothing about it that would have made any difference if you'd been there.
I know it's stupid guilt. It makes no sense.
And
it's very illogical. But I felt so horrible. I cried about that. And then the next day I came home from work and they were taking his bed away and everything was empty where he had been. And it hit me and I hit my point. I need to go home and cry and sleep. And I did.
Yeah. Well, and I had to, it took me a few days. I had to hold it together a few days. We had to make the arrangements and all that kind of stuff. But then once I was able to finally kind of let go, then I was able to start getting better. And it wasn't until then that I was able to start moving forward. It wasn't until I was able to really kind of feel like I had a big, like, breakthrough kind of, or a let down kind of moment. Let the air out of the balloon, that I could start moving forward.
And it's still going on. That balloon's still deflating.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
I'm just trying to let it deflate at its own rate instead of trying to push the air out, make it come out faster. And it's hard for me. I am very much a fixer. I want to help.
Yeah.
I want to fix.
David wants to. I want to fix it. I want to fix it. I want to fix it. I want to make it better. I want to make it all right right now. I want everything to be good in this moment. And that's not how it works. You can't fix it. You can't make it all be okay. There's not a wand to wave. There's not some, you know, wrench you can turn or whatever to make it be, you know, suddenly all okay. But you can do things to, you can't fix it, but you can do things to make it easier. Which are things like, you know, read your partner and do the things that your partner needs, whether it is, if your partner is touchy-feely, cuddle with your partner. If your partner is more of, you know, a don't touch me kind of person like I am, allowing your partner to have that space like David's doing. You know, I've been watching lots of Mystery Science Theater 3000. And now I'm on to Farscape, which is
an amazing show done by Jim Henson and the Sci-Fi, Jim Henson Company and the Sci-Fi Network back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Wildly underrated.
It's very good. You don't think those are real puppets. You lose yourself.
You do. You lose yourself in the idea that especially Rigel is a puppet.
Yep. It's a great show.
It is.
Brian Henson helped create that.
He did.
Yeah. Anyway, but you have to help your partner. And this is part of going back to when you laid the foundation of your relationship. You have to be there for your partner, understand the way they work. Doesn't mean you understand it completely, but you have to have a good general outline.
And if you are the partner who's grieving, don't be afraid to say what you need. Don't be afraid to say, look, I gotta have some space, or look, I need some cuddles, or look, I need some alone time, or look, I don't know what I need, but I need to decompress, or I need to let off some steam, or I need to get out of this house, or I need to talk, or I need to play a game of Scrabble, or I need to whatever it is. Watch
TikTok for an hour.
I need to do something. Whatever it is that you feel like you need, it's okay to express that need. Because sometimes your partner may not just know, and it might be something that is out of the norm for you. It might be something that's completely, you know, out of left field. It might be something that you might not have thought that you needed before. You might be somebody who's normally more introverted and you might feel like you need to get out, or you might be more extroverted and you might feel like you need some alone time. So, you know, it's okay to just say whatever it is that you need.
Yeah. Cause there'll be some things that I have no idea what you're thinking. And you're like an orange cat. Just pure chaos. No one knows what's going on inside that head.
I'm glad I can keep your life a mystery.
It is super, super serial.
Yeah.
I think the best thing you can do if your partner is the one that has lost their parent is understand you're never going to replace that. You can be there for them, but your relationship will never replace the relationship they had with their parents.
No, no. Because your relationship's not meant to be the same thing. Mm-hmm. I remember my great grandmother being in her 80s and still missing her mother. Mm-hmm. Her mom. I don't think that if you have a good relationship with your parents, that you ever get over it. Mm-hmm. Even when my grandfather died, he saw his dad. And he was in his mid-80s. And his dad had died like before my mother was ever born. Like, you just...
You never replace that.
You don't get over it.
Yeah.
And I know that. I haven't lost my dad when I was so little. Like, you don't fully get over it. You don't, you don't fully recover from that. You don't let them go completely. If you had that good relationship, there is something about them that will always be with you. And something about them that you will always need. And my voice is really crappy for a podcast right now. But, that's, the point is, as a partner, you can't take on that type of relationship. You can't take on that type of parental love. Because, number one, that's weird and not healthy. And number two, that gets into, you know, a whole area of, you know, trying to crowd somebody out of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't do that.
Well, I think that's a good stopping point. I don't know if your voice could go another 10 minutes.
Eh, probably not.
Well, I am David. You can follow me on social media. Ooh. on X/Twitter at DavidSears75, on Instagram, DavidSears1982, and on Threads at DavidSears1982. Lila, where can they find you?
That's a really good question. I'm Lila Gale 80 on Threads, and I think on Instagram as well.
Yes, because I've tagged you with some memes and sent you memes.
Yes,
I'm the meme king,
and I'm Lila G Cat Mama on TikTok.
All right, this has been a very real and very emotional episode. We're going to try to get back to a weekly podcast thing. Got some topics we never really got into. But we'll get into.
Thanks for hanging with us. Thanks for hanging in there. Thanks for coming back.
And Lila,
be kind to yourself and your partner.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.